Welcome to Spotlight on Africa with me, Claire Broadhurst. This week, we go to Sierra Leone, where we look into a spike in the rate of teenage pregnancy, which some observers believe was caused by an increase in sexual and gender-based violence during the Ebola crisis of 2014-2015. While the rate of sexual assault and violence against women was already problematic in the country, several independent studies reveal that the Ebola outbreak made women more vulnerable to exploitation, abuse and violence, and some argue that this led to a significant increase in teenage pregnancies. According to a study by the United Nations Development Programme, the teenage pregnancy rate increased by 65% during the Ebola epidemic. The aim of the study was to assess the level of prevalence of sexual abuses during the Ebola outbreak. Walter Neba-Shenwi is the project manager for the Access to Justice Programme of the UNDP in Sierra Leone. He explains what their key findings are.
It was clear that sexual and domestic violence were prevalent in 2014 and that the outbreak of the Ebola has contributed to increase the numbers of incidents within communities. Teenage pregnancy, which was one of the key findings, was also on the increase. And in certain communities, it was reported that it could vary between 50 to 65%. The question was, how could this be measured? It was revealed that what used to happen previously in those communities and what was happening during the crisis was all a different thing altogether. So that is why we came to the conclusion qualitatively that teenage pregnancy was on the increase. The third finding was that service provision for survivors of LGBT was obstructed by the Ebola crisis. Accessing medical, accessing courts, accessing the police investigations was somehow very difficult during the crisis.
Having spoken to a number of victims, he explains who they found to be the prime suspects of such abuses.
The suspects for some of these offences were mainly teenagers and also elderly people, influential people at community level, traders, businessmen, and also people of importance at the level of the community. So what happened, maybe let me just emphasize on the fact that because of the imposition of some of the restrictions on movement, the curfews, it became apparent that all these measures increased hardship at community level, economic hardship at community level. That, in turn, encouraged sexual activity of teenagers, mostly who were in the quest, you know, for survival. That is why you could have some of the offenses being committed on girls, just because they're looking for something to survive on.
Monica Onyango is an assistant professor at the Boston University School of Public Health. She specializes in managing disasters in complex humanitarian emergencies. She explains that epidemics are almost like a conflict situation and Sierra Leone should have been treated like a disaster-stricken area. She says that violence had increased because of the loss of governments and chaos and instability.
The communities were not able to cope with that phenomenon and therefore they needed external help, which came to some extent. But the communities were also overwhelmed. And given the fact that it was an outbreak, which was killing people, it was highly infectious, people were afraid and whatever was happening around it, created that environment where gender-based violence was bound to occur. And if you look at the documentation which has been done, for example, some girls were taking on domestic responsibilities. They were away from immediate care, poverty. They were not going to school. Teenagers were roaming around in communities. There was breakdown of law and order at that time. So all those put together, that created an environment where there were lots of vulnerabilities other than Ebola outbreak.
She says that although this abuse is very unfortunate, people on the ground had other priorities at the time.
If you think about Ebola the way it was, the outbreak, it shook the world and communities were shaken. People were dying, literally. So it's basically what's your priority at that time. And the organizations which were responding, the governments which were responding, the ministries of health, the health departments, they were overwhelmed and we all know about that. During such a time, where do you put your priorities? At that time, the priority was to try and save lives as much as people can under the circumstances and saving lives of people who were dying because of Ebola. And so much was going on. This was an infection which was spreading very fast. The communities themselves were afraid of even touching each other, so to speak. When a disaster happens, there's a lot of chaos, and I'm saying there was some level of chaos when Ebola happened. Priority at that time was to try and contain the spread of Ebola, try and see how you can quarantine people, identify communities, the public health measures which were being put in place. People are overwhelmed. Organizations were overwhelmed. So it was a matter of priorities. And if you look at the health system as a whole, everything else took a backseat.
Dr. Axelle Rons is Médecins Sans Frontières Emergency Coordinator for Ebola. She explains that the outbreak was already a huge challenge to tackle.
We have sent in those three countries more people than we have never sent before. I think more than 5,000 expatriates were sent to help. And then we also hired so many national staff, and we were overwhelmed by trying to fight the disease first. Normally in situations when we are in bad situation like war or all these things, normally we have a mobilization of the international community. And in this kind of thing, in this setup, you have also people in charge of protection. And I guess if those people would have been mobilized a bit earlier, maybe this topic would have been taken in charge by someone that has knowledge regarding this issue of rape. And I guess here the international mobilization was really late in the process, and after it was not really focusing on the other aspects than just health and fighting the disease. But we could have imagined that if the system like it was supposed to be deployed when you have a disruption of society would have been deployed earlier, maybe this issue would have been tackled on and not 2 years after.
But Onyango of Boston University laments that the news of an increase in sexual violence in the country at that time should not come as a surprise.
Communities were in a panic. People were being quarantined for long periods of time. We don't even know how that quarantine was taking place, whether it was families being quarantined together or strangers finding themselves with strangers in buildings. Nobody knows, and I think that is something which will need to be examined so that we know what's going on. Teenagers were roaming around in the community because there was no supervision. Parents were ill. Some had died. Sexual exploitation because there was no food at that time. So there were all these other factors which are risk factors for sexual violence or for gender-based violence at that time. So that's the way we should look at it. The consequences of Ebola created an environment for gender-based violence to happen.
Studies conducted by Save the Children and Plan International also reveal an increase in teenage pregnancy in Sierra Leone. However, they say they're still reviewing whether there's a direct causal link to sexual violence. Isa Kooko is Save the Children's country director there. He's much more cautious when talking about the issue.
Save the Children is not saying that's true or incorrect. What we are saying is from our children Ebola recovery assessment that we undertook in March, there were reports of an increase in teenage pregnancy. Some children reported assault cases, and there was an emphasis on the fact that the closure posed a bigger risk to them. Now, the kind of activities they were obliged to undertake, especially the girls, as an attempt to support their household, potentially could have posed certain risks. And obviously, that's where elements of rape or sexual assault could easily come in. But as of now, while making this very important observation from the children themselves, it doesn't mean there is an actual measurable and quantitative increase in rape or sexual in Sierra Leone. Or there may well have been, but at the moment data becomes an issue.
He says, however, that a report on that issue is soon to be published. According to him, though, the government is aware of the threats and is doing everything in its power to tackle the situation.
They have appreciated and recognized the surge in teenage pregnancy as a problem. And we've also seen how much they are paying attention to it and devoting resources to addressing that situation, both in terms of prevention and even the response itself, to making sure the support for these teenage mothers is upheld. The national strategy of the reduction of teenage pregnancy is now being reviewed and will be extended for a second phase. This is remarkably important for us.
Now that the outbreak is over, aid organizations in the country will continue assessing this issue nationwide and making recommendations to the government. What is clear is that this delicate issue will need to be addressed in the coming months. Thank you for listening to this edition of Spotlight on Africa.